And just in a little aside, this is not written here. Introduce our main speaker for this evening, Pearl from Lemon Grove.
Wow. Oof. I'm nervous. My name is Pearl, and I'm an alcoholic. Sober by God's grace. There's a lot of people in here. Can everybody hear me? Alive by God's grace. Do I look as scared as I feel, you guys?
Yeah.
It's all good.
Just breathe.
Who is that saying, breathe? Thank you. I definitely need to hear that. You know, I tried to get out of this commitment. Oh, I'm in the right place. People definitely identifying what I'm talking about. So what I'm going to do is what I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what's going on in my life now, or my experience, strength, and hope. And the first thing I would like to do is ask everyone who can, would you join me in one of my favorite prayers, which is the third step prayer. I love starting off. You know, I'm not a speaker, but when people ask me, I definitely can, you know, tell my stir and tell what it was like, what happened, and what's going on in my life today. So let's do a moment of silence, and then I open up with the third step prayer, or we will open up with the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I will help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Thank you. And what I'm going to do now is read one of my favorite parts of the big book, and then I get into my story. And it's in the chapter, There is a Solution, on page 25. It says, when therefore we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And what that means to me is that today, one day at a time, I'm living a life beyond my wildest dream. Bottom line is, I drank for 12 years. I never thought about getting sober. And I definitely did not think about staying sober for as long as God has kept me. My sobriety date is October 12, 1985. And one day at a time, you know, it's thank God, you know, people like my friends here on the front row, and especially Tabor, she's been here quite a few 24 hours, taught me about the one day at a time and, you know, try to stay out of yesterday and try as best I can with my thinking not to go into tomorrow. And that has sustained me for over 26 years, the one day at a time, you know. And one of the things that I learned also, first of all, before I get in my story too, I just want to say welcome to the newcomers, you know. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, welcome to a new beginning and a new way of life, because each and every day is a new beginning. And I don't want to start crying. I'll talk a little bit about that later. I lost two very dear friends of mine this year, but I'll talk about that just a little bit later. If it's God's will, you know, I know once I start my story, it's whatever it is that God wants me to say. And I've learned, and I tell my sponsees, it's not if the storms of life come, it's when the storms come. What are you going to do, you know? And what I've done is when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told to build a foundation, build a strong foundation, so when the storms of life come, I won't be uprooted and go back to drinking. And so I was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. I came from a family of six. I'm the number five of six kids. And I used to wonder why my favorite number was five. Now I know. But anyway, and I came from a real poor family. You know, I mean, a very, very poor family. And I was thinking about that. And like I shared with my dear friend of mine, Ruth, came tonight. I shared with her that, you know, my life is real simple today. And one of the things that I'm really grateful for, especially as far as where I came from, I was able to, you know, take some time off today. I actually went to a celebration of life for another friend in the fellowship, and I was able to actually take some time and, you know, just take care of myself and get my nails done and you know, just relax. And where I came from, that would have been impossible, you know. And so, like I said, I was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee, and make sure you put the clock on me, right? Okay. All right. All right. All right. All right. And I was I am the number five of six kids. And, you know, even way back then, long time ago, I always used to wonder, something is wrong. You know, I mean, I didn't say it out loud, but the way I lived and the way I felt about what was going on in my life, I'm like, something just not right, you know. And it took me to go through all my insanity and live my life before Alcoholics Anonymous. And then when I got here and I found out, yeah, something was wrong. And the thing for me is that I really believed that I was born with this disease, and it just took for me to start drinking for it to activate. And I also learned that it's not necessarily what happened to me that caused me all the pain and stuff. It was how I reacted to what I thought was going on, you know. And it's still like that today. That's why I'm so glad that no matter what's going on in my life, somebody in my life knows what's going on with me, because I don't want to remain a secret. I was talking to someone after a morning meeting this morning, and something happened to me during the week this week. And, you know, I had plans to tell Tabor about it. You know, I'm like, I know that I can talk to her or a couple of other people that are in my life, that I don't have to worry about what I say is coming back to me. And so when we got together, when Tabor and I got together, it just wasn't time for me to tell her. And I said, God, who is it that I can, you know, talk to about and not be judged and stuff? And so he presented this woman in my life this morning after the meeting, and I was able to tell her what was going on. Because, you know, like they said, we're as sick as our secrets, and I definitely don't want to be a secret. And I really believe, like the big book talks about, it's about if I were to start back drinking again, I would not pick up where I left off at 26 plus years ago. I really believe I would pick up where I had been had I continued to drink for 26 years, because this is a progressive disease that we have, and it progresses whether we drunk or sober. And what I do know is I don't know where I would pick up at 26 years later. And what keeps me here in Alcoholics Anonymous is remembering where I left off at when I got sober. And I was, back then I was drinking probably 3, 4, sometimes 5 bottles of wine a day. And I was in the military. And I, you know, what was really a trip for me, you guys and ladies, I even had the alcoholics telling me not to come back, you know. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad, you know. And another thing that I learned, especially from my home group, they taught us about attraction rather than promotion. So I just wanted to, and I was thinking about a friend of mine tonight when I was thinking about what I wanted to actually wear to come to the meeting and share with you guys. And Bill told me one time, and when he saw me in a dress, he was like, something is different about you, Pearl. And I'm like, what? He was like, you got a dress up. But anyway, you know, so I wanted to try to present myself as best I can tonight. And it hasn't always been like this, you know. Me and my best girlfriend at the time, back in 1973, was downtown Memphis one day, and we decided, you know, we just had this bright idea that we was going to join the military. Next thing we knew, we was on a plane bound for Orlando, Florida. You know, and we got in real late at night, and by the time, you know, we got to the barracks and stuff. Wait a minute, before then, they had all of us, felt like, you know, a herd of cows or something. They had all of us at the airport where the company commanders met us. And me and my girlfriend didn't know what was going on at the time, and they had us all together. And then they was issuing out numbers. And so, you know, I'm looking at my number. I'm like, what are these numbers about? And my nickname back then was Peaches. She said, Peaches, I don't know what's going on, but she said, what's your number? She saw my number, and she went and she got the same number from another lady. She switched her number and got another lady's number that matched my number, and that's how we ended up in the same company in boot camp, you know. And, you know, Vanessa was definitely a godsend. Like I said, she was my best girlfriend back then at the time, and she was a normal drinker, you know. We was on the buddy system, and I was stationed in Virginia Beach, Virginia. She was stationed in Norfolk, and Friday afternoon, it was time to get off from work. I would pack my little bag and headed to Norfolk and stay in the barracks with her, and we'd just be partying the weekend, you know. I mean, even with my first drinking, I didn't really tell people out loud, but you know how you have that voice and you know something is wrong, but it's like, give me another drink, you know. Something was wrong when I first started drinking, but at the time I didn't know. And so me and Vanessa got stationed together the first 4 years in the military. We both was in the Navy. She had sense enough to get out after her 4 years, and I stayed in. And matter of fact, I made it a career. And at that time, the reason why I decided to stay in, because most of my adult life, I've been a single parent. I have a son. I cannot believe you guys. You know, I look like I'm 21, right? Yeah. I have a son who turned 40 in April, and my baby, my daughter, she turned 35 last month, and it's like, the more I keep coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous, the younger I get, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But anyway, where was I at? Me and Vanessa, okay. And so after boot camp, we got stationed here in San Diego for A school. She went to Dental Tech A school, and I went to Storekeeper A school at the time. And what was interesting to me, I was 18 years old, had not had my first drink. And when I checked into the barracks, I didn't even know what it was called at the time. But for some reason, I asked, you know, one of the things when I was checking in, I was asking them, well, where's the liquor store? And then I'm like, where did that come from? Of course, I found out later, you know, and I mean, going through boot camp, we had, I think it was 8 weeks of boot camp or either 12 weeks. I can't remember now. That's been a long 12 weeks. Okay, it's been a long time ago. It's been, what's this? This is July. I've been retired for 19 years. And I'm like, so it was a long time ago when I started boot camp. But anyway, you know, and then after boot camp, went to A school, and, you know, we had to, like, check in the morning. I think it was muster was like at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. And sometime I would be so drunk and hungover from the night before, you know, and every time I'm in A school, and every time I would go out, I would try to get my girlfriend Vanessa to go with me, and she wouldn't go, you know, and then so I would go out, you know, with the rest of the crew and meet him, you know, and had a lot of hymns in my life. Lord have mercy. Help me, Jesus, help me. I take that to a closed women's meeting, okay? But anyway, you know, and for some reason, you know, when I tell my story, different things come up, and what's coming up now, for some reason, I remember one morning, I was coming from getting back on base, coming from my boyfriend's house, and, you know, had been drinking all into the night, and woke up with a terrible hangover, and, you know, I think I was like maybe 5 or 10 minutes before missing muster, and I flew into the barracks, put my uniform on, and tiptoeing, you know, down, and I remember standing next to my girlfriend. And most of the time, you know, they give you that look when you done did something wrong, you don't know what it is, and they just look at you and like, And that's the look that I got. That I got that look a lot of mornings, but that particular, you know, that particular morning, I was, you know, that's that. I haven't thought about that in years. Wow. But, you know, like I said, Vanessa was the normal drinking. I was the alcoholic. And, you know, I got stationed at a lot of beautiful places. My first duty station, like I said, I went to A school here in San Diego. And then I got transferred to Virginia Beach, Virginia. I was there my first 4 years. And then after I reenlisted, I went from Virginia to Hawaii. And my drinking, everywhere I got stationed, my drinking just, it was like it was waiting on me there. It just took off, you know. And I'm thinking about Mama Cheney, and she used to talk about, you know, when I take any alcohol whatsoever in my system, I end up in strange places with strange people doing strange things. And she would also say, in strange position. I say this so I won't forget. One time I was talking to Mama Cheney about something, you know, and this was when I was sober, right? And I was talking to her about something, and it was like she had an intuition or whatever it is, you know. And she was talking about, you know, sometimes, you know, when you have too much to drink or whatever it is, and, you know, and you find that guy in the bar and he looks like, that's him, you know, that's my knight in shining armor. And then you wake up and it's like, and the thing that was a trip, Mama Cheney was my, I used to call her my program mom. She was talking about in sobriety. And I'm like, I'm saying to myself, this is too much. How does she know? You know, and I'm looking over there like, okay. Believe it or not, and I know everybody, hopefully everybody either have experienced it or will experience it, it takes a while to change some behaviors, even in sobriety, you know. And I'm just so grateful that I don't have to act like I used to act. I am really grateful that no matter what has come up in my life, I haven't found it necessary to drink. And my drinking just took off when I was stationed in Hawaii. I mean, guys and ladies, I acted a complete idiot. And I remember a guy in the program used to call it, when he would share about his story and share about what's going on, he used to call it ignador. I'm like, that's it. Every time I put alcohol whatsoever in my system, I acted ignorant. I mean, oof, it was crazy. I was crazy. And, you know, a single parent with two kids and in the military and, you know, a male-dominated society and stuff. And it's like, and I used to give myself those excuses. I mean, if you had my life, you would drink too, you know. And I just thank God that he was with me. God was with me even when I didn't know that he was, you know. And, like I said, my military career was, you know, I actually ended up retiring from the military back in 1993. And I got sober when I was in the military for 12 years. And one of the things that I didn't believe is that I didn't believe that I could stay sober and stay in the military because I started drinking in the military. And then, you know, after I got caught with my DWI and went to captain mass and stuff, they wanted me to go to, you know, first of all, they wanted me to stop drinking. I'm like, yeah, right. I had no intent. I'm serious. I had no intention on stopping drinking. And so I went to treatment in up in the Navy hospital up in Long Beach, California. It's no longer there. The hospital closed. But, you know, thank God that I got the foundation that I did from the hospital, and you know, even with them closing, I didn't have to pick up another drink, you know. So how much time do I have? I want to get out of my drunk log to get to the program. I just forgot what I said. Long Beach, okay. My foundation, thank you. And I talked to a real dear friend of mine probably about maybe a week or so ago, that saw me when I got sober 26 years ago. And she reminded me that we went back to that hospital, Naval Hospital in Long Beach. Me and her went, and we drove from San Diego to Long Beach. I think it was like one Wednesday night or Thursday night, and to get my first year, because I had some people in the hospital. A couple of counselors in the hospital was betting that I would not stay sober. Maybe 30 days or whatever, you know, and because however long I was in treatment, I think I was in there for 8 weeks, and then they extended my stay because I was in so much denial, and they really didn't think that I would make it, you know. So when I got my year, one day at a time, me and my friend at the time, we drove back to the hospital, and I got my year, and I was really grateful that some of the counselors were still there. And they was like in shock, you know. And the big book talks about some of us, you know, don't have the capacity to be honest, you know. And one of the things that I was taught when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous is just, you know, be honest and tell on myself. And so that's what I did. And from Long Beach, after I got out of treatment, I got stationed here in San Diego. And one of the things that I don't do it so regimented today, but one of the things that I had to accept about myself that I really didn't like was that, you know, coming from that family of origin and being regimented with following rules and, you know, trying to not to do the wrong thing and all that. When they told me part of my treatment plan when I got out the hospital was when I got here to San Diego, I had to check in with the command and check in with, I think they was called the DAPA at the time, drug and alcohol something, and let them know that, you know, I was in the program and blah, blah, blah. And I was able to do that. And so I got stationed down at Naval Station 32nd Street, and I went to a meeting every day at lunchtime. I was still in the military, and, I mean, it was really crazy. I went to a meeting every day at lunchtime, and then in the evening on the way home, I went to a evening meeting before I, you know, before I actually got home. So probably my first 5 years of recovery, I went to 2 meetings a day and sometimes 3 and 4 meetings on the weekend. And for whatever reason, when I got sober way back then, we had, during the holidays, we had a lot of, what do you call them, marathons. And, you know, so it was really easy to get 3 or 4 meetings on the weekend because it was marathons round the clock, you know. And so I was able to do that. I checked in, you know, at my command and let them know what was going on. And thus started my journey to alcohol, you know, through Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it was real, real, very challenging to not drink. I mean, real simple stuff that you guys told me, like, don't drink. And I'm like, you know, because I'm call myself intellectual, right? I'm like, okay, don't drink. What do you mean? What do you mean, don't drink? I mean, that was a concept I had never heard. What are you talking about, don't drink? You know? And some of the people would say stuff like, put the plug in the jug. And me, with my intellect, I'm like, I wasn't drinking with no plug in the jug. I just had my bottles. But anyway, you know, and one of the things that they also say, you know, the acronym for KISS, keep it simple. Oh, no, you would not call me stupid at the beginning of my sobriety. That was a fight. You know, people had to change it. I mean, trust me, you guys and ladies, I've gotten a lot better. But in the beginning of my days of recovery, I mean, I was very, very angry and enraged that my command, the captain of my command, and I lived next door to him when I was stationed in Japan, had the nerve to tell me that I had a drinking problem and he wanted me to stop drinking. I'm like, no, I can't do that. And then they talking about not drinking for 6 months, and then after 6 months, since you sober for 6 months, can you do another 6 months? I'm like, now, wait a minute. Let's get serious here, you know, because I really thought that after the period of time that the military wanted me to stay sober, I really thought that I was going to start back drinking and drink like a lady. Yeah, really. You know, like the big book talks about, something is wrong with my thinking. My main problem centers in my thinking. And during that 6 months time, when I first got sober for 6 months, something happened. And what actually happened, you know, I got a sponsor, started working in steps. I went to a lot of meetings, you know, a lot of meetings. I went to speakers meeting. I went to closed women meeting. I went to open discussion meeting, big book, you know, step study. I mean, I was, the word that's coming to my spirit is infiltrated with Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I wasn't grateful then when I first got here, but today, and looking back over my life, I'm really grateful that God put people in my life that was not afraid to, you know, tell me the truth. And I used to complain like, you're hurting my feelings. And one lady in particular that was from my home group, she would call me the B word, and she would say, I'd rather hurt your feelings and save your life than to be tiptoeing around, you know. I mean, because this disease is cunning, baffling, powerful, and very patient, you know. And so I'm really grateful that, you know, I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was willing to take a few suggestions. And I had a sponsor, I had a sponsor that told me what to do, and I was like, and I'm really glad that I didn't really say what I was thinking. You know, because if I had to say what I was thinking, I mean, she was, her and some of the women that she hung around, you know, they carry weapons. My weapon when I was drinking was my mouth, and still is today, but, you know, God is actually taming my tongue. But, so I'm glad that I didn't really say to my sponsor, and some of those real rough and tough ladies from my home group at the time was the Friday Night Imperial group. I'm glad I did not say a lot of time what I was thinking. Whew. You know, and like it talks about in the big book, we are people who normally would not mix. I mean, and God, I mean, I'm a nice lady. Trust me, I'm a nice lady. And God got such a funny sense of humor. He put me with women when I got sober that I would not have been hanging out with. I'm serious. When I was drinking, I would have been too afraid of them, you know. I mean, they carry guns and knives and switchblades, and I'm like, are you guys serious? I just wanted to get drunk. I did not want to be fighting and doing all that cutting, you know. One lady, part of her story was, you know, she was short and she loved real tall men. And for whatever reason, when she was drinking, you know, she said they like to jump on her. And I just take my switchblade and cut them off of me. And I'm like, I just wanted to drink. I didn't want to fight. Can we all be happy? You know what I mean? Let's be happy. But anyway, that's not part of my story, cutting folks and all that, you know. But anyway, so I'm really grateful that, like I said, no matter what has come up in my life, no matter what's gone down, haven't found it necessary to drink. And I just want to say to the newcomer, and it may be somebody in here that's not so new, you know, when the storms of life come, you know, even before the storms come, you know, get a relationship with, even if you don't believe in God, you know, you can actually use the group as your higher power until you find a God. That's what I love about the steps. It talks about finding a God of our own understanding. And even way back then, you know, and Mama Chaney showed me this in the big book where it talks about, my life was so complicated and my thinking was so complicated, I had to have something real simple. And how I started off with the God of my understanding, I used the big book example. God either is in my life or he isn't. And so when I start working the steps, I'm going, okay, just for today, God is in my life. There is a God and it's not you, Peaches. I'm going, okay. You know, and that's how I began, you know. And one of the things that I love, I teach the big book, you know, and I work with individuals and families that's recovering from different addiction in my chosen career field. And I love teaching the big book. And one of the things that I did once I worked the steps with my sponsor, I worked all 12 steps in my first year. And one of the things that I did that after I worked all the steps with my sponsor, it was, I don't know, it was something still missing, you know, in our relationship as far as us working the steps. So I actually really started getting into the big book and started studying it for myself. See, it's a difference when I'm working the steps and going through and having somebody tell me what happened to them. You know, she didn't actually tell me what to do, but she tell me what she did when she was working the steps. But then when I had my own experience as far as working the steps, I was really excited. It was like, wow. And it talks about in here that we have found a way out. And the thing that I love, ladies and gentlemen, that I love dearly in my life, and the people that know me know, I always say I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state. And the key word is seemingly hopeless. You know, I really thought that I was hopeless when I got here, and God hooked me up with a home group and hooked me up with people who showed me by the way they lived their life that I wasn't hopeless. It was just how I had lived my life before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a lot of ups and downs in my sobriety. When I was 2 years sober, I lost my mother to a massive heart attack. And then 7 years later, my father died. And that was 94. And then my baby brother, he died in 97, died from AIDS. And, you know, he had some tokens, and I didn't really know his story. But I found out later that he was trying his best to get this program. You know, he had, I don't know what the chips were, whether it was 30 days, 60 days or whatever. But I found out, you know, because I was always, even after I got out the military, I came here when I got stationed in San Diego. And I stayed here, and this is where I retired at. So I would always go back home. And most of the time when I go back home, my baby brother would be in his favorite home, which was, you know, jails, institutions, you know. And so when he tried to get the program, I don't know how much time, but I heard about that. You know how you hear the stories after people pass and stuff. So I lost my baby brother. I think he was 2 years younger than me, and he died in 97. So, and he was born in 57, so I think he was 40-something. I can't remember. And what I also want to share is that, you know, death is a part of life. And I'm 26 years sober. However, I'm into my 27th year. And I've had a lot of things that happened in sobriety this year that has never happened before. And one of them was I lost my very, very, very best girlfriend in April. She was 23 years sober. She died in her sleep. And instead of me focusing on the things that I was not able to do in her life, and I didn't know she was as sick as she was, 2 days before she died, I have a service commitment at the church fellowship that I belong to. And I was on my way to church this particular afternoon, and God just told me to turn around, go see Marie. And I'm like, okay. See, I've been here long enough to know that intuition, like they say, that sixth sense. I didn't have to question it. I just went. And that was on a Wednesday afternoon, and I spent Wednesday afternoon and Wednesday evening with her. I went back Thursday to take her to her doctor's appointment, or take her to her doctor to make an appointment. And she had the appointment for Friday afternoon, and she died Friday morning. So I was really grateful that God gave me that time to be with her. And I remember our last meal together, I didn't think it was a big deal. And I asked her what she wanted to eat, and she said some French fries. And so I went and got her some French fries, and I didn't get like a small French fry. I didn't get a medium French fry. You know those big to-go containers? I got a... And when she saw it, she like, what's... I said, I just wanted to make sure... what can I say? I love food, you know what I mean? And while I was waiting for them to, you know, to, thank you. While I was waiting for them to make her order, she didn't just want French fries from McDonald's or whatever. She told me, I said, well, where do you want them? And she said, we used to call each other sis. She said, sis, you remember that place that we went to that day when we went to the park and we went in? And I'm going, no, I don't remember that. And she was like, well, okay, just get me. And I'm like, okay. So I left and I prayed and, you know, and prayer does work. You know, I prayed and God led me right to the place, you know, thank you. And I got the, you know, while I placed the order and while I was waiting on her French fries, you know, I'm looking around and the guy looking at me like, what is she tripping about? I'm looking around, I'm like, oh, this is an Italian restaurant. Do you guys have lasagna? And the guy was like, yeah. Do you have spaghetti? I mean, come on. It's like, come on, Pearl. I mean, I was like in a, I don't know, I would guess I was in a trance or whatever, and I was really jazzed on the fact that I did not know where this place was, and God led me right to it. So I'm there waiting on my girlfriend's French fries. But anyway, so I ended up getting dinner for myself, and I got some lasagna, I got a salad, and some garlic bread, and I took it back to the house. And so, you know, when I was telling her about the French fries, and she peeping over my plate, and I'm like, she's talking about, what you got in there? And, you know, and I told her, and of course I had more than enough for both of us to share that meal, and what I didn't know, but that was her last meal. And I remember her saying, you know, sis, you just don't know what this is doing for me. I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, it's been a while since we actually, you know, just hung out together, and for us to just sit down and have a meal together, you know, she couldn't describe it. And I didn't really think it was a big deal, but anyway. And what I've learned also is that another girlfriend who I gave my 24-year token to last November died last month, Diane. And what I've learned from both of my girlfriends' deaths, and they were a part of my life. You know, me and Diane was together for, I saw her get sober 24 years ago, and I saw Marie get sober 23 years ago. And one of the things that God is doing in my life, and especially this year, is that not only this year, each year as my sobriety goes on, it lets me know that the most important thing in my life, number one, is that I stay sober. And it's all about relationships, you know. It's not about me having the perfect man in my life. It's not about me having the perfect house or the perfect this or the perfect that. It's about me having those relationships and developing the relationships with the people, not that I want in my life, developing a relationship with the people that God has placed right in front of me. And what I used to do is I would have people right in front of me that wanted to be my friend, wanted to get to know who I am, and I'm looking over them, you know. I'm not looking like the people on the front row. I'm like, I'm looking all around and stuff, and it's not like that today. It's about, you know, looking at the people who are right in front of me and knowing that these are the people that God has placed in my life. And, you know, I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I work the steps. And not only do I work the steps, I take the principle, because there's a principle in each step of Alcoholics Anonymous. I take the principle out of the step and actually apply it in my life. And I say this, and then I close, is that what I had to learn, you know, to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, first of all, staying sober and not drinking no matter what. And what I had to do that I do on a daily basis as best I can is, how do I, being the crazy sober alcoholic that I am, not drinking, take these steps off the wall and apply them in my life so I don't have to go crazy in my life on a daily basis? Because, I mean, anybody that knows me, especially, you know, even though I live in an apartment, the people that visit my home, they know you cannot come in my home with a bunch of insanity. And I, you know, sometimes I kind of like try to get my sponsee's attention. I'm saying, if you say something that's crazy or whatever, you're going over the banister. You know, as they come in for the first time, you know, I'll be walking them up the step, and I'm like, you like the banister? Say, oh, yeah, per. Then when I get them behind closed doors. But anyway, you know, and that's how I live my life today, you know. I don't have a bunch of insanity going on in my life. And I used to live in chaos, and I used to live for chaos. I mean, I come from violence. I come from, like I say, a lot of different men, and I had my daughter's father. We used to have an argument. This was way back when I first started drinking. We used to have an argument. Okay, thank you. He used to say, why, Peaches, why? Why can't you be the woman that I want you to be? And my response to him was, why can't I be the woman that I am? And then we both get drunk and start fighting and all that, you know. And I mean, that's real simple, but that was the kind of stuff that we fought over, you know. And I don't live my life like that today, you know. I cannot stand. It angers me. It enrages me. It enrages me when I see a man beating on another woman, especially when that woman is me. I've been in a relationship one time that was really, really violent. And you know how you go through something once and then you have to go through it again or whatever to realize that you don't have to go through it? Well, that's something that happened in my life. That's part of my experience that only happened one time, because I'm like, nope. God did not make me to be no punching bag, you know, and I'm glad that I learned that, and I had to learn that, and that was with my daughter's father. Like I said, she's 35, and the last time we've lived together, she was less than a year old, you know, and when I had him put out the house, you know, I haven't had to go through that again one day at a time, and I'm so very grateful for that. And you know, I work in another fellowship, and one of the things is I've been working with, sometimes I work with not a lot of men, but I work with few men. And the thing that I tell both the men and women is that I don't think God got us clean and sober. You know, even Alcoholics Anonymous talk about that we're not a doormat for anyone, you know. And sometimes my life is a kind of a lonely road. And first it was like, when I got here, it was like living life on Pearl's terms, you know. And then when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I started working the steps, it's about living life on life's terms. And today the difference is, not only is the glass not half empty or half full, my life is full today, and what I'm doing is I'm living life on God's terms. And I tell you, God's terms and the way my life look according to God is nothing. It is nothing like I thought it would be, you know. And so that's what I do today, and I'm so very grateful that it's over with now, and I don't have to be nervous. And, you know, I hope you guys and ladies got something out of my story. And the bottom line is, you don't have to drink even when you want to. You know, even when you want to drink, you can just, you know, talk to somebody about it or whatever, and, you know, take it a day at a time. And when the day gets too long, hour by hour, minute by minute, and moment by moment. And like in chapter 11, I think it is, a vision for you. It talks about our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. Thank you, God. God will constantly, that's all the time, disclose more to you and to us. It says, ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the person who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So what I do, I see to it that my relationship with God is right. And great events will come to pass for me and countless others. This is the great facts for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Not as I understand God, but as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find. That's what got me here tonight, because I definitely didn't want to come. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge. And to me, trudge means walk with purpose. Happy road of destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then, thank you.